Essay with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, wow. This is an exciting day today. And when I have somebody really, really famous, Karen Slaughter, I'm so thrilled that she's going to be on in a few minutes. But I want to tell you to stay tuned because at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Sarah Z. Sleeper. Sarah, I love that name. Sarah Z. Sleeper, and she is going to be talking about her book that is set in Japan, and it's a love story, a mystery of a young girl who is looking and searching for a man that she fell in love with. And I always love stories like that. So I'm looking forward to talking to Sarah at the bottom of the hour. And in a few minutes, I'm waiting for Karen Slaughter to come on. And when she's on, I will start talking to her. Because she's somebody special. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. This is exciting. Now, I want to also tell everyone, please go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper.com. And if you have a question you want to ask me, write it there. Or if you have a question about intellectual property, Bill Larson's going to be on the program at the end of the month again, and he will answer all your questions. And he always has great information. And, of course, part of it is make sure that you protect yourself, not just your intellectual property, but your reputation. Be careful what you write on the internet. You don't want to get yourself in trouble. You don't want lawsuits. The last thing a writer needs is a lawsuit. I've talked to some authors who've had major lawsuits, and you don't want to get involved in that. Right now, for example, Lee Child is suing he's suing the world practically because they are pirating, of course, the Jack Reacher books. Why not? They're very popular, but he has to. You know, you would think that when a book is so famous as a Jack Reacher book, no one would try to pirate it, but they do. People do. And so there's lots and lots of things that you have to do to protect yourself. And that's one of the challenges of authors all the time, is that you have all of these things happening and you have to know what's going on. And my webpage is radio-joyonpaper. Go there, send me a message. And you can also tell me about an author that you want me to invite on the program, because I love to invite authors that you guys want. And, you know, if you want, and I could even invite you on the program, and so you can join in the conversation with your favorite author. Because right now, I am going to be talking to, I'm going to call her the world-famous romance author, Karen Slaughter. Karen, are you there?
I am.
Oops. Sorry, I introduced you as a romance author. You're actually a thriller writer.
That's fine. I've been called worse.
But to me, I know that the whole thing is all the crime and the murder and everything else. But in the end, the love story is so great. And we are back with the new book. It's called The Silent Wife, and it is mind blowing in many ways. And I just want to thank you for it because, you know, you're difficult to read. Do you know why? Because I can't put the book down.
I read about some tough things.
Well, that it's not that. It's that you can't put the book down. And as we say in England, when I lived in England, we have to go to the loo sometimes. Or perhaps in Georgia, you have to go to the outhouse. And it's so hard to put this book down. So I thank you for all of the little places where you'll write something that I have to stop and look up. So it'll give me a chance to go to the loo. Because otherwise, you know, you just don't stop reading this book.
Well, thank you. I write them so that you can read them in one sitting and hopefully feel gripped and that you just want to keep turning the pages.
Yeah, well, unless you have a bladder, like a blimp, you got to stop sometimes. And so I do thank you. I know exactly, for example, I know exactly where I got up to go to the loo. I mean, I'll mention the shark. You asked a question about sharks. I know that I got up at that point. You every once in a while you'll throw in a word like rumspringa. And so I have to stop and go check that. So that's another lube. So that's how I know when I went into the... It's so funny because otherwise you can't stop reading this book.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Wow. And as I said, the love story, what can we do? We're back with our favorite characters. Three absolutely strong women, Sarah, Amanda, and Faith. And we're always interested in them. And then, of course, you brought Jeffrey back this book.
I did. You know, Jeffrey's a character I wrote about many years ago, and I thought it would be interesting because his ex-wife, Sarah Linton, has moved on from him, and she's dating Will Trent. They're getting serious in their romance, and suddenly a case comes up that Jeffrey investigated 8 years before, and now Will and Sarah have to investigate it again because Jeffrey may have gotten the wrong guy.
Well, yeah, I thought we had at one point the last of Jeffrey, and in many ways I like him. I like him to come back, but I always have this urge to sort of kick him in a certain area of his body. So,
well, he is an extremely confident man. He definitely has an ex-athlete swagger.
Oh, yeah.
And he walked out on Sarah, and she had a hard time forgiving
him. And I never forgave him. I never forgave him. She forgave him. I didn't forgive him.
Yeah. Well, he kind of took a coward's way, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
He said, I didn't want to upset you.
Oh, God.
He was just too afraid.
I was right with Sarah's sister. I'm after you guys.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm more of that myself, too. But fortunately, my characters get to tell their own story.
Yeah, isn't it? It's wonderful to have these three amazing women characters. I'm not sure which one you... Probably you're a little bit of each of them.
I am, yeah. Well, most of it, but Faith is a mother, and I don't have any children, so I have to do a lot of research for her, and especially with the pandemic, a lot of my friends want to murder their children right now, so it's been interesting talking to them and trying to get ideas for Faith when I write about her in the next book.
Well, I'm just telling her. You know, to me, Faith is real. So just appreciate the opportunity because as a homeschool mother, I had two boys 24/7 for 18 years, and I loved every minute of it. So.
Oh, good Lord. Well, you're lucky you're blessed with that temperament.
Oh, well.
A lot of my friends are really reconsidering how they looked at homeschooling before and have a lot of respect for teachers.
Oh, but I found the joy in it. And I love Faith. I love what Amanda has her own distinct personality. But, of course, we all love Sarah.
Well, she's a character I've written about for almost 20 years, and I like to think that she's grown and changed her opinion of stuff as I've grown and, you know, certainly traveled more and written more about characters. I feel like every book I start, I'm going to learn something not just new about myself, but new about people and why they do the things they do. So this was an excellent opportunity with The Silent Wife to dive a little deeper into her personality.
And you did. That's why I think it reads so well. Because for those of us, even if you have never read one of these books, I think anybody who even just jumps in will find the same thing, that you become so fascinated with her. And, of course, I love Wilbur. And really, you sometimes get a little over excited here writing about his abs, but I don't mind. I don't mind. I like that part. That's why I think of you as a romance author, in addition to being a great thriller writer.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I think I just write romances where really horrible things happen and brutal murders happen. But that's the heart of the story, is this love story between these two people. And I use crime as sort of a springboard to open up conversations about what's going on in the world and how they feel so deeply, passionately, not just about each other, but about the community that they live in.
Well, it's full of relationship problems and solutions and all sorts of fascinating things in between, of course, this mystery, which I will tell you, it has to be one of your absolute best because it's so thrilling from the point of view of it's a horrible crime, just a horrible crime. And it's always terrible, as I said, because on the one hand, there's so much romance. And then on the other hand, you have really real police procedural crime here.
Yeah, and this is a tough one. It's also one that's based on a case from real life, if you want to get really scared and think about it. And a lot of the times I write about cases from real life because I'm just not capable of coming up with anything more awful than what people do in there every day. So it was a real challenge to incorporate this into a story. And part of the reason I write about characters and love and relationships is because it gives a positive balance to the really horrible things that I'm writing about that people come up with to do to each other.
Oh, absolutely. And there are so many there are so many big points and little points in this book, things that, for example, I didn't know. And so there's always something to find out in your books because you do, I'm sure you talk a lot to, to people in the police world and in the forensic world. So you always throw things out there that I find fascinating or that, again, give me the opportunity to stop for a minute. I'm always wondering if there are, like, any groups of people is there, like, an industry or a few industries that might want to put, like, a hit on you? Because you've written, there are a lot of people who are going to think about running in the forest. I mean, like, maybe you're not going to be so great for running shoes that people use for running in the forest because... You know, Georgia, well, I love Georgia. I love North Georgia, Clayton, the Clayton area. It's beautiful. But you wouldn't get me running out there now for anything.
Part of the time when I'm trying to think of an opening for a book is I look at my real life and I think, what am I scared of right now? And, you know, as a woman, there are a lot of things that we have to be conscious of that men just don't worry about. You know, being in a dark parking lot or going for a run in the forest or, you know, at the grocery store and we get that weird feeling that somebody's watching us. Men just do not ever have those feelings. And so I think about those and think, okay, well, how can I put this in a story? And you know, in the opening of this book, I've got a young woman who goes out for a run, and she even jokes about it being rape o'clock because it's so early in the morning, the sun's just coming up, and... You know, of course, this being the first chapter of one of my books, something really horrible happened.
We know that. We know it.
But that's what scares me, you know. And the fact is, people don't wake up saying, I'm going to be the victim of a violent crime today. They wake up and think, oh, I've got to, you know, pick up the kids. I've got to go to the grocery store. I got to go to work. They never think about what the bad thing that's going to happen. So it's always a shock and surprising. And that's what I like to write about.
And you do it so beautifully. I love the police procedural part where you get into, you know, how the police talk to each other and all of that. I find fascinating.
Well, thank you. But, you know, I talk to a lot of police officers. You hinted a little earlier about research, and I have a group of they're actually retired police officers, so they're women in their 60s, and they will tell you the truth about some things. And I love asking them, you know, what would happen in this situation, or what's a case where this has happened so I can look it up and get the reports and get the interviews and get all the witness statements, and that they are so generous leading me down the right path so I can find these details that I love putting in the novels that give them a feel of realism.
Well, they do. And, of course, you write about Georgia so beautifully. As I said, I love North Georgia. I love Macon. So I always find myself feeling very comfortable in your books.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad that I've captured the state for you.
Oh, you have. I think Omakana, the 1842 Inn there is one of my favorite places. There are just so many wonderful places in Georgia. And so you capture that. You capture the feel of the people. And what I... As I said, there's a specific industry. I'm not going to talk about it, but definitely I think that you might have changed that completely in the future. So it's funny how something can really, I don't even want to go there, but it's fascinating. That's part of the fun of reading this book. And I felt you must have had fun doing it because, as I said, you brought Jeffrey back and... I don't know. Do you write up in a cabin there in the woods somewhere in Georgia?
I do. It's in North Georgia. It's not that far from Clayton. It's called Blue Ridge, Georgia. And my father lives up there, and I've had a cabin up there for about 20 years. I go up and I sequester myself. I didn't realize it had a word, quarantining. And I just sit down and I write every day, and that's where I really feel like I'm myself the most, is when I'm at my cabin all alone writing my books, and I'm so excited when I have a good story to tell. And this was really just a pleasure to write. I think people are going to be really pleased with it.
Well, this is so funny. In honor of your father, I actually had cornbread the other day because I come from Michigan, so we don't eat cornbread except at Thanksgiving. So that I am eating cornbread in the middle of August is absolutely due to your father, because I read the last little note in your book, and I happened to be in the store, and there they had this package of beautiful-looking corn muffins. And I mean, I would never normally buy them, but I was thinking about you, Dad. I said, okay, I'm going to eat a corn. So I had to buy it.
That's great. He'd love to hear that. You know, his special recipe has bacon grease in it.
Ah.
He won't use butter. He uses bacon drippings, and they're just delicious. He makes them for me when I'm up at the cabin because he's worried I'm going to starve to death because I get so involved in the story I forget to eat. So some mornings I'll get a knock on the door, and he'll be there with homemade soup and cornbread to make sure I keep meat on my bones.
Well, and because you're a tiny little thing, I met you here at BoucherCon at the Vinoy Hotel, and it was such a wonderful event, and it's so sad that there's not going to be a BoucherCon this year.
I know. And for those who don't know, it's just a wonderful crime convention where mystery readers and writers get together. It's such a wonderful community. But it'll be back. I'm sure it'll be back.
I don't know if I told you last time that at that convention, there were three little old ladies from Minnesota. And I always pick up that accent whenever I hear them talking like this. I know that they are from Minnesota. And there was one of the little old ladies was all excited because she had touched you. As you were walking by to go to the ballroom for one of the luncheons, she had touched you. And she's holding her hand out and telling her friends, I touched her. So I think there's some woman up in Minnesota who hasn't washed her hands in 2 years.
Well, I hope with the pandemic she made an exception.
I hope so.
It's so great to meet readers there. They're so warm and welcoming, and I just love having that opportunity because for a lot of people, you know, they don't get out. They don't have book events in their community. They don't have the opportunity to meet authors. So I just think it's so important to make sure we're all there.
And I thought it was so funny, you know, seeing they look like, you know, real country women, and with this talking like this, I thought they would be after the cozy mystery writers. But no, their favorite author, I mean, they came down just for you. And I thought, whoa,
yeah,
what are you ladies doing up there?
Yeah, it's great.
But isn't it wonderful that you have such fans? Of course, and
absolutely.
I don't know how
I'm
many
so
languages
grateful.
Now, how many languages, like a zillion.
A lot of people from Minnesota came from Finland originally. That's one of the territories I'm published in. I think we're up to over 100 countries where my books are available now, which is really crazy to think about.
It's amazing. And I am so happy. I was so happy to hear that Pieces of Her your wonderful novel, is going to be on Netflix, because I am so desperate for something good to watch. And I know that book will, I know it's going to be just great.
Well, thank you. You know, I'm very excited about it. They hope to start filming in September in Australia. Toni Collette is the star. She's Australian. And, you know, if we're lucky and pandemic willing, we'll be able to watch it streaming next year.
Okay, well, you know, we hope to, I don't know. Now we have to have films where they, like in Indian movies, where they don't do any kissing.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the actors want to kiss anybody anymore. It's like,
I know.
Isn't
yeah.
it crazy?
Well, you know what? They'll figure it out, because it's such a big industry. You know, just in the state of Georgia, the movie industry brings billions to the state. So I think smart people are working on it and trying to figure it out, because we definitely need to see kissing on screen.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah, we have to see a little bit of, oh, well, I can't wait until, yeah, I want to see Will and Sarah, all of them on film, too. It's just, you are such a great author, and I am so thrilled, you know, that that I got to meet you. I'm sure you don't remember, but you hugged my bear. I brought my bear with me.
Oh, I do remember that, yeah.
Yeah, because I like to take him around. Now, I don't know, I can't take him around anywhere. I can't go around anywhere. And, of course, the nice thing, as you said, you are used to being quarantined.
Yeah.
But it is hard, and I'm sure that your fans would have loved for you to do some book tours and all of that. But I know that everybody's been waiting for this book to come out, and I know that you're working on something else already. But this book is fantastic. It's called The Silent Wife, and your website is, let's just tell.
KarenSlaughter.com,
yeah,
Karen with an I.
That's it. What more can we say? And they can, you know, get this book wherever books are sold. And Karen, I think you've done, as I said, a tremendous job with this book. As long as no major industry puts a hit out on you, which they, you know, you have to be thinking about that. As long as they don't do that, you'll be back here in about a year, I think, for the next book to come out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and you'll be back, and we'll talk about the next book. And meanwhile, everyone, they really have to get this book. And you know, during this, it's hard during this pandemic-y thing, and we're all stuck in the house. That it is nice to have a book that is a page turner.
Well, thank you. I hope people enjoy it.
Okay, again, Karen Slaughter, the book is The Silent Wife. It is scary, it is beautiful, and it is a love story on top of everything else. And I want particularly to say, Karen, I love that you support libraries, and I am always interested in anybody who supports libraries.
Well, thank you so much. It is a passion of mine. They're so important to the community. You know, this is a homeschooler. Textbooks are very expensive, and it's great if you can go to the library and check something out. And I think we got to remember, as we come back from this economic downturn, that we need to be sure to take care of libraries, because they sure do take care of us.
And you started a nonprofit organization called Save the Libraries, which I think is fantastic.
Yes, we've raised about $500,000 to date. We hope to be doing more. Oh. As soon as authors can get back out there touring and donating proceeds, we'll be there to help them.
Okay. Karen Slaughter, thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. Wow. Okay. Let's just say, you read this book and your mind, in many ways, you know, I'm so sorry, the murder part is so rough. So if you don't like, you know, very scary murders, but it's the story is great. The love story part is absolutely delightful. I enjoy these characters very, very much. It's her 20th book, and I think she's got, I think she must be 50 million at least that she sold. And so definitely worth reading. Now, we're going to have a commercial break, and when I come back, ooh, I have another love story, but a real love story. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Sarah Z Sleeper. I love the Z. Oh, I always love the Z.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
Hello. Good morning. Good. How are you?
Okay. Well, okay, you know, I love poetry, so I was really thrilled to find out that you are an ekphrastic poet. And so,
yes.
You know, I want to talk to you about your poetry, and I want to talk to you about this fantastic book. The cover is beautiful. I just love this.
Thank you.
Isn't it wonderful?
I love it. The publisher's artist designed it, and I absolutely love it. So thank you so much.
And the name of the book is, am I pronouncing it right? Gaijin.
It's Gaijin.
Gaijin. Okay, Gaijin.
Yeah, it's a Japanese word, so it's pronounced a little differently.
Gaijin. Okay, yep. Gaijin. And it's, once you see this cover, you will just, you want to buy the book because there's something it's like a mystery. You know, it's going to be a little bit mysterious. You know there's going to be something really dramatic in here. And of course, it's about, well, so much of it is about Japan. So let's take a little step back and tell us about the book, what you want to tell people about it. And then I want to talk about your poetry. And
sure.
Do you want to start off by reading the poem at the start of the book? Or?
Sure. This is great. I mean, I'm so excited to talk to you. And it's just absolutely wonderful that the cover makes you want to read it. That's the goal. So mission accomplished there. And I'm going to pass along that comment to the publisher and the artist. So thank you for that so much. And I'm happy to tell you about the book, or I can start with the poem.
Start with the poem. Let's have a bit.
Sure.
Because I'm a poetry nut. So
this poem is called Mono no Aware, which is a Japanese term that means awareness of impermanence. Love, tea, and flowers. Impermanent, transcendent. Are you aware of beauty that flames up and out before it can root itself in the earth of truth? Memory is truth, like brown dirt smeared on a cherry blossom pink canvas. And that poem was inspired by a Japanese art form called maki, and that is sprinkled powder, and it's sprinkled silver or gold dust, basically, that is on porcelain or other art objects so that it makes it kind of glow.
And it is beautiful. Well, of course,
thank
Japanese
you.
Art is beautiful. The poem is beautiful. And
thank you.
I love poetry, and I've been over the past few years, well, actually, since I started the program, when I had the Poet Laureate of the United States on, Juan Felipe Herrera at the time, and that I think poetry does so much for people. If you take time to read poetry and write poetry, you can be so in the moment with a poem.
Right. I couldn't agree more, you know, and I just actually wrote an essay about the combination of poetry and prose. Sometimes a publisher might think of that as a hybrid, so difficult to, or sort of like arcane, like readers might be intimidated. But I believe, and others believe, that the two play off each other and create a deeper emotional connection with the reader. And in the case of this book, the character, you know, has a poetic heart. And so she has things that she wants to say in poetic language versus just, you know, plain old black ink in a newspaper article or whatever. So I fully agree with you. And I think each unit, the poem should stand on its own and the prose should stand on their its own. But together, they make a deeper whole.
I agree. And so tell us about Lucy, because poetry is important to her. And tell us about how you came out with this character.
Okay. Well, first of all, I named her after my niece, Lucy. So there's that. I've been promising her that I named the character after her for a few years. And she's like, I'll believe it when I see it. So now she's happy because there it is. But Lucy is from a small town in Illinois, and she's relatively provincial, sheltered, and she has fallen in love with a man from Japan who is sort of mysterious, and you can see that on the cover with the male figure there at the bottom of the cover. He has his back turned, right? So she basically falls in love with him, and he basically disappears, and so she is kind of obsessed, and she sets out to find him by taking a job in Japan and going there to sort of figure out why he's sort of disappeared off the face of the earth, or at least she can't find him. So she goes there, and when she gets there, she gets caught up in all kinds of interesting situations, learning a new culture, working in a new culture, and she has sort of a crashing dose of reality when she hits the ground in Japan.
And she discovers that she is a gaijin.
Exactly, right. So there are several gaijin in the book. One is Lucy, and that's a term that means foreigner, but more specifically, it's not really a slur, but it's a little bit of a, you know, unwanted foreigner type of thing is what it means usually in vernacular. And her lost boyfriend, Owen, feels like a gaijin in his own family because his family kind of rejects him. So there's a couple different levels of that going on.
And so there we start with this mystery. What's happened to him? And as I said, that's why I like the cover, because it's very evocative. You know that there's something, he's far away, and you know that we're going to follow him. You know, we're like the character, we're like Lucy. We have to jump into the cover, and we can feel like we're, you know, following behind him to see where he's going.
Right. We want to know what happened to Owen. We want to know why he left so suddenly. We want to know where he is. And in doing that search, Lucy has the chance to get to know herself better and kind of, I don't want to give away the plot.
Don't give away the plot. No spoilers. I hate spoilers. Hate them. I hate when people come and say, "Oh, yeah." I don't want any spoilers. I think what's interesting is that the depth that you went into in understanding sort of Japanese culture. How they think about certain things, and so where does this come from? What's your background in this?
Yeah, well, I lived there for 4 years in the 90s, actually, when I myself was a reporter and an editor living there. So now you know about how old I am. I was there as a professional woman in the mid-90s. And so some of the things in the book, and this won't give anything away, but a minor character in the book someone tries to kick him off his bike when he's riding and yells the slur Gaijin at him. That happened to me while I was there. You know, my blonde hair especially made me stand out as other, you know, in that small island of Okinawa. But so that was the inciting, you know, situation, is that I lived there for 4 years. And so I got to know a lot of the good stuff. There were great things that I experienced. And I also got to know the darker side, which every country, every city has both good and bad. So that's what I was trying to portray in the book, not a glamorized version of Japan, but a sort of an honest version.
Now, when you were living there, did you felt really, was there an animosity?
Gaijin.
Yeah, well, you're Gaijin, did people actually, you know, as you said, somebody pushed you off the bike because you were blonde?
I guess so, because he yelled the word Gaijin at me when he did it. So.
Well, you know, you would think, I thought we were getting over this. Somehow, it wasn't like 2000 when we hit the year 2000. I thought, let's get over all this nonsense, a race, a difference, and, different races, ethnicities, orientations.
Well, we might be on the cusp of some enlightenment right now, right?
It could be that
this is happening more so these days.
It's
not a bad thing if the world becomes more enlightened.
The thing is, the Japanese certainly have known Americans for a long time. And, of course, you were in Okinawa, which is a difficult place, I think, because of the fact that we have a military base there, which not all people want.
We have 11 military bases there.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, you know, some people, and I've known a few people who were stationed in Okinawa on military bases, because I was doing a book about pilots.
I know
people who were there, and of course the wives of the pilots who were living there, and
yes.
So they were all saying the same thing, that okay, well, you know, we could all go away, but then what happens here? You know, it's not all, you know, one sided, and so it was a difficult place, I would think, even in the 90s for you to live there.
Well, I mean, what I would say is I had a great experience, you know, myself, because I did a lot of really interesting cultural things. Like, I did a dragon boat race with local people, and I wrote a story about an amazing quadriplegic local artist, and he gifted me with a painting of my cat at the time. I had many really nice experiences there. That being said, the sort of simmering tension between the U.S. military, and I was not affiliated with the military, but the U.S. military and the local people is very clear and palpable when you're there. And the way I would say it is, like, the U.S. military bases take up about 17% of the island. It's not a very big island. And it's a power inequity, because the military folks can go off base and go around in the local community, you know, and go to restaurants and whatever. But if you're Okinawan, you most certainly can't go on base unless you are employed there. So it's kind of a little bit of a power inequity there. And it does lead to some trouble, as my book talked about in parts. But it's interesting.
It is. You know, but, and of course, what I enjoy, I think the cultural part, the talking about the art. Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah, I've gone to tea ceremonies, which are so elegant and beautiful, and the people are so mannered and lovely. You know, it's really just like everywhere. It's a beautiful culture with other, you know, with darker sides too. You know.
Yes, my son spent some time in Japan, and the of course he was very interested in art, and so just it was almost overwhelming to see some of this fantastic art in person. It's incredible, the talent and the artistic ability of, you know, the porcelain, for example. You just go crazy.
And Ikebana, you know. I took Ikebana while I was there, and that was beautiful. I have two beautiful black lacquer chairs that I bought there. Still have them. They're gorgeous. So, yes, I mean, there's so much artistry and art there. Absolutely.
You know, and you weave it all so nicely. Is this your first novel? Yeah, right?
It is. But I'm I've made my living as a writer for my whole life, and I had to step away from journalism.
It's a different kind of writing because you're very you very evocative. It's very poetic, and your prose is poetic. And then, of course, having the addition of the poems, which I think, as you said, it's wonderful. And I think that more and more, actually, people who are when they're reading books, they don't mind that sort of little break to have a poem. And I think it's nice that when there's a poem in a book, you might read it, you know, as part of the story, but then you might want to go back and just read the poem separately. And I think that's...
Yes, you might like the book that just came out by one of my former professors and mentors. He's the former poet laureate of Maine, and his name is Baron Wormser. And his book is called Songs from a Voice, and every chapter features a quatrain, and it's quite cool. It's really cool.
Well, I'm going to contact him, and I'm going to tell him that you recommended him. Oh, he's going to be so happy. And he was your professor?
He was my professor when I was getting my master's in fine art. He was a poetry professor at my university.
Well, I hope he gave you an A. And if he didn't, he'll go back and fix the transcript there. Because
I'm fine now, so he'll give me an A just for being a friend.
That's I'll have him on the program.
Wonderful.
We have a little bit of time, so tell us a little bit about this ekphrastic poetry and how people could approach it for themselves.
Oh, thank you. You know, I love talking about this. I teach a class in ekphrastic poetry, and I've always loved poetry, but when I was in grad school in 2011, I was given the opportunity to write poems that were inspired by art in a museum, and that's ekphrastic poetry. It's not poetry about the art, it's inspired by the art. So I got to, you know, lurk around this museum for a few days and take a bunch of pictures of the artwork and even interview some of the artists. And then I wrote this collection of ekphrastic poetry, and I gave a public reading, and it was amazing. I was like, this is so fun. So the way I tell people that are interested in it to approach it is to, first of all, study the piece of art. Make sure you understand its provenance, you know, where it came from, sort of what it was, who made it and when, that kind of thing. Note your own emotional reaction to it. Just sort of cue into what you feel when you are observing the art. And then apply your own story to it, whatever story or narrative the artwork inspires in you. And so I kind of put those three things together, sort of like research, emotional reaction, and story. And that's how I write ekphrastic poetry, and I tell others to try that too.
Well, I think it's great. And I think that, as I've always told people, that take a moment, take a few minutes every day and read a poem. Because I was raised with the idea that if you just take a few minutes a day to do something good like that,
right,
it can change your whole attitude. And if you also then get into the habit of writing down words on paper, that's why I named this program Joy on Paper, because it gives you so much joy to see your words when you, and the nice thing about this has no rules. So often, and that's why I was terrible in school, where the teachers would say, you have to rhyme this, or you have to have so many things, or you have to have so many and even, you know, haiku, you have to have so many things. But
right. But
having the ability just to write what you feel, what you see,
right,
and what just makes you emotional for a moment, that, I think, is the greatest poetry.
You know, absolutely. I think formal poetry, you know, poetry, poetic forms like quatrains and sestinas and whatever, those are all fine, and it's certainly good to study those if you're a poet. However, prose poetry is quite common these days and very accepted in the mainstream. And you can get like a poem a day in your inbox from the Poetry Foundation. You can just sign up for to get a poem a day, and you can also get one from the Paris Review. They'll send you a poem every day if you sign up for it. So that's fun too.
Yeah, that's a good one. I do that one myself. I love that.
I just love
doing anything that I've said. I'm doing the Paris Review. It just makes me all feel all literary.
I feel so much smarter just by subscribing.
Don't you feel that way? You say, oh, yeah. The Paris Review. Yes, I got it from the Paris.
Like, yes,
somehow it makes it
the Paris Review.
Yeah, it makes you feel very literary and very.
Yes.
You feel.
For sure.
You know, Hemingway, everything. So, yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, it's wonderful. But the book is really, you know, it's a wonderful story from the point of view that it's a love, sort of heartbreaking love story, a mystery, because there's that element that we don't know what's going to happen, and we're not telling anybody what's going to happen.
No, no.
and we don't want to know. But we don't want to know until we read it, because we pick it up and it's one of those books that feels great in the hand. It's just the right size.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
Everything about the production of the book is perfect, and it'll draw people in, and you learn a lot, and your prose is just it's poetic prose, and that's a wonderful thing about poets who become authors. So I'm sure that you're already working on another book, because you have found, journalism is one thing. That's one type of writing.
Yeah.
And you do have to actually have a big switch on to get that, I don't know if it's softer or deeper love for words in your prose, and you've accomplished that.
Oh, Patsy, thank you. That's just the best compliment I could receive.
Well,
I really appreciate it.
You have a website you want people to go to, as a matter of fact, because it is
sure.
very pretty, and it has the book in the website, and people will like it.
Yes, it's sarahzsleeper.com,
and
I would love it if anybody looked at it anytime.
And I think you have a newsletter. Do you have a newsletter?
I haven't really been that good about newsletter writing.
Not yet.
But I write a lot of essays, and those are published all over the place. So, you know, they're linked on my website.
Okay. Well, Sarah Z, I love the Z, Sleeper, and the name of the book is Gaijin, and it's available wherever books are sold, and I think people will enjoy it, and I wish you the best with this book, and I look forward to the next one.
Oh, Patsy, thank you so much. I appreciate being on your show today. It's a real honor.
Okay, and I will invite Baron, and we'll talk about you, so one day your ears will be burning, and that's because we're...
Perfect. I'll tune in all the time.
Okay, so I'll let you know, too.
Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day.
Okay, you too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now. All right. Okay, that is a love story. It's a little, you know, it's we all need a few different kinds of books in this world, and you know, what can I say? I'm just having so much fun with all of the. Well, I'm not having so much fun with all of the books I'm getting. I do want to say one thing: if any of you are writing some book that will make me laugh, please send it to me. I need a book that'll make me laugh. I mean, I have so much fun getting these books and reading all these books, whether they're thrillers, romance, whatever. But I would like just a few books that would make me laugh out loud. So if you have a book that, or an author whose books make you laugh out loud, let me know. Go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com. Meanwhile, if you're looking for books that'll make you laugh, and, oh, listen, people, enjoy this opportunity to have your kids home. And the best thing is to get the Bagthorpes, Helen Cresswell's Bagthorpes. It's a saga. There's a bunch of books. I think there are 5 or 6 books. Get them. They are so funny. Whenever I need a laugh, I pick up those books. The other one I really love to read when I need a laugh is Laura Resnick's books. She writes fantastic, really, the Esther Diamond series. I always laugh out loud when I read her books. And, oh, we need that. So those are the two that I can think of right now at the top of my head that'll make you laugh. Laura Resnick and Helen Cresswell, read their books and have a laugh. And when you're ready for some murder, get Karen Slaughter's The Silent Wife, because there's plenty of murder in that book, I tell you. But there's also wonderful, wonderful love stories. So, yeah, a little mixture of everything. Now, I do want to tell you again, people, be nice to people out there. My goodness, some lady hit some lady in the Staples. Hey, go on. Calm down, people. This pandemic won't last forever, we hope. And just please calm down. And I am so grateful to Big Ed in the control room, who keeps this place so... it's like being, you know, in a boudoir where you have all this perfume bottles and you spray everything and you smell really great. In here, I smell of Clorox, but you know, what the heck? It does its job. So I do appreciate everything that Ed does. It's every time he runs in here for all of us in between programs. Right, Ed? Are your hands all dry now? Yeah, you need hand lotion. That's what happens with all this stuff. But anyway, it's always fun to talk to authors, and that's what I enjoy so much. And I do want to thank you again, all of you, for your messages. I want to thank my son particularly for for keeping in contact with me. He was back in Wisconsin, and it was 62 degrees there yesterday, and we had 93, I think. So, yeah, what a change. And he likes cold weather. What can I say? And also to Kanisha. Hi, Kanisha. Nice thinking about you, and we have to get together. And everybody, meanwhile, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to have those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, a streaming video like Karen Slaughter's book is going to be on Netflix, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, which is what I am hoping for Carol J. Perry, because her books are fun. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice again to Big Ed, because I always say something nice to Big Ed. Okay, and he saluted me, and I saluted him. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye. Have a great... What is today? Is today Tuesday? Wednesday? Thursday? It's Thursday! Oh, my gosh! Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.